KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. The Park City Board of Education met yesterday and discussed a number of issues. In the studio with a recap, I have school board member Andrew Kaplan. Good morning, Andrew.
Morning, Leslie.
Your communications director presented some impressive social media statistics saying that some 50,000 hits have been identified on the school district's Facebook page. Is this the way we communicate with the public now?
I think it's one of them. I'm not a huge social media person, but a lot of folks get their news from Facebook and various social media feeds. And I think it's, what we've heard again and again from the community is communication is a priority. And, we're trying to do it every way we possibly can. We have a new blog that comes out almost daily. There's a news story. Certainly after board meetings, there's a recap. But also when there's big news events at the district, that's also shared. And then a lot of the time that's reposted on various other social media avenues.
Yeah. So has there been feedback to the school board? I mean, do people feel like they have access to the board and administration through social media channels? Or?
I think the feedback is consistent. There's never, I haven't once heard that we're getting too much from the district. So I think we're going to continue to try to put out as much information in as many venues as possible until people say stop.
The last two or three board meetings have had no public input in them. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there a sense that all of the questions have been asked? Is it time now to act? And I guess I ask this because at one point the Park City Council last year said, you know what, enough studying. We're taking action. At what point is the school board moving to action?
We're implementing quite a bit right now. I mean, I think it depends on what you're referring to in terms of action. If it's regarding facilities, which has been a huge topic and kind of the elephant in the room, we're working towards it just in a slightly different way. We're going through the strategic planning process. We have a number of meetings in the coming weeks, which are small breakout sessions, one of which is going to be solely, teachers, faculty, staff. We'll have two meetings for them, one for elementary teachers, one for secondary. We're going to have one that is just community members and one that is just administration. And one of the pieces of feedback we heard was those groups would all like their individual opportunities to speak. And then once we conclude that and really solidify our values and our strategic plan, we're going to be moving into master planning. And the master planning will help inform, amongst other things, what the facilities will look like. But we're active on a lot of other things. The mental health component is something that we've been spending a lot of time on. Last night we spent a lot of time talking about a special ed update, which I'm sure you're going to ask about. But that special ed update also incorporates a lot of other things, and we really need to flesh out a lot. It incorporates things like curriculum. It incorporates intervention and support for a number of different kids, and that includes kids with reading disabilities, with writing disabilities, with math disabilities, with, and I think all of us have had struggles with one of those at some point in our education. It also addresses, the gap we have with English language learners. So the difference between kids with language acquisition issues and learning disabilities. And as a district, we haven't really had a plan so far on how to tackle that. And if you add up all of those kids, right, special ed, learning disabilities, language learners, it makes up, around 20% of our student body, which is a massive amount. And there's a lot of work and focus being put into what's the right curriculum, what are the programmatic solutions that we can offer the kids, and then what are the personnel and resources required for that. So we've been really busy. It's just on slightly different aspects than we have, than we spent the previous 6 months.
Right. And I am going to get to that. But in terms of action, I mean, I guess I'm thinking like later start times, grade realignment, drug policy, testing policy.
The start times issue is a difficult one. And really our main constraint there is the traffic along the 248 corridor. And as much as we've tried to figure out a solution to start our high school and our adolescents later, the issue is that the later we start, the more traffic builds up on that corridor, especially during the winter. And so we're kind of hamstrung. And It's very frustrating for the board. It's frustrating for the community. We know that there's an interest. We have a shared interest in starting our schools later for our adolescents so that kids get more sleep. They're better prepared to learn. You know, if our priority, one of our priorities is taking care of the whole child and prioritizing everything it takes to get ready to learn, it's very difficult for us to see that continuing to be a problem. But we're going to continue to work with the city. We're going to look for solutions. And again, something like that may inform our master planning, right? If one of the big values of our community is later start times, then that may influence what our facilities look like and where they are. And I think that's the right way to do this, as opposed to the opposite way, which is to say, well, we're going to put a building here and, you know, not give any reasons why. We want the reasons why to inform, you know, our later decisions.
All right. So something like that and grade realignment then is really down. We've kind of kicked the can again on that because we haven't made this first decision yet.
Well, it's I guess you could look at it as kicking the can. We could also look at it as taking the feedback from the community that they want an explanation why, and they want us to stick to values and priorities of the community to inform our decisions. And, you know, I think as a board, we've recognized that we haven't done the best job of that. We've acted in what we thought was the interest of the community. And the community has repeatedly told us, no, that's not our interest. So we're going back and we're doing this with the community, and that's what the master planning, you know, process is going to be. And then we'll get to those.
A year ago, we were hot and heavy with regard to the drug testing policy. Where do things stand with that? Is that not going to happen, or
it's still being looked at. You know, I think it's part of a greater conversation around mental health. It's part of a greater conversation around what support we're providing our kids for mental health issues, for anxiety, for stress. We have, you know, what could be described as a mental health crisis in Summit County. And, you know, that's across all ages. We don't have the support that's needed. And that includes our children, and drug abuse and drug usage is a symptom of that. And, you know, it's part of, we're looking at it from a number of different ways. We're looking at it as a, you know, from a programmatic solution along with Summit Health and communities that care. We're also going to, you know, look at that as a specific issue, but I think it, you know, to look at it in just in isolation is not exactly the right way to do it. But we do recognize that that is a concern of a lot of parents, and it's a concern of a lot of teachers. I hear that a lot, is that, you know, especially as we move towards investing our capital reserve into safety measures, you know, the question comes, well, what about safety of the kids in the school? And a lot of that is, you know, mental health related. A lot of it is, we don't want kids using drugs. We don't want kids doing dangerous things or harming themselves. And we recognize that that is an extreme priority.
So moving on to the discussion over mental health, special education, mm-hmm. You were pretty vocal yesterday about your disappointment that our new associate superintendent of wellness, Bill Belknap's curriculum and special ed teams really aren't preparing a report that was helpful in showing just what they have been doing or striving for. So was there a deadline imposed for this and they missed it? Or, I mean, where's the frustration coming from?
No, I think there was no deadline imposed and missed. And I think, you know, Ben has come in and done a very good job in terms of trying to, as he described, tear it down to rebuild it. And I think there's a lot of infrastructure that we don't have that we need. There's a lot of, again, it's a balance of, you know, figuring out a personnel solution along with a program solution for a lot of these issues. And he's, you know, he's making progress. I think the frustration for us, or I should say, you know, the frustration comes from our responsibility to hold our administration accountable, right? And that's, again, a value of the community where they want leadership accountability. And it's our job to make sure that policy asks and policy decisions by the board are kept on track. And so it's not just an issue for special education. There's a curriculum component to it. There's a lot to it. And it's our job to ask questions, you know, much like it's your job to ask us tough questions. We have to sit there and ask tough questions of our administrators and make sure that, one, they have the resources they need to implement the policy that we're requesting, and two, that they have a timeline and a plan. And to date, we haven't had a solid enough plan. And that's something that Dr. Belknap recognizes and the superintendent recognizes. And they're going to be working, you know, over the next month with the board to refine that and come back and present towards the end of November.
Well, you seem frustrated that Dr. Belknap hasn't hired all of the people. Again, as the board has approved, he's saying, though, he doesn't think he can handle taking on more people. I mean, that they, you know, they've got, they're drinking from a fire hose. But, you know, I mean, shouldn't we be listening to him? Isn't he the expert here?
Yeah, so I think it's a balance, right? And this is something that that Dr. Belknap and I agree on, and that we've had many conversations on, is that there's a balance between, again, you know, changing the programs and changing the curriculum and changing the setup in the schools versus simply throwing dollars and bodies at a problem. Now, if you don't have enough people to implement the new programs, that's a problem. But, you know, we are going to defer to him in terms of implementation and give him enough time and bandwidth to get to where he wants to go. And I'm confident that he's going to keep us in touch, and he's going to let us know if he needs more resource or less resource. And, you know, as he pointed out last night, there's some other things that are outside of our control, which is student enrollment, and especially in some of our programs like special ed, where we had, I believe, another 8 students come into the district who required one-to-one support during the day. And so that has budgetary implications, and he's working through all of that as well. So he has a huge job, and, you know, talk about drinking from the fire hose, you know, the busy first couple months he's had it.
Yeah, and I guess we should note this is exactly what board member Eihausen was talking about last spring when she was very concerned that the district couldn't handle putting in place 30 new staff members. And I think it's just coming to bear fruit here, no?
Well, you know, I think that was, you know, a lot of the staff members are actual, you know, classroom teachers and instructors. You know, one thing that's going to happen is when we increase our programs and increase our resource allocation on things like special ed, on curriculum, which have big gaps for our students, there's going to be growing pains, and there's going to be a time to burn-in time for these individuals to get into the district and find their feet and get going. And so the concern from the board is just that they have the resources and they have the what they need to succeed, and you know, we're confident that they will succeed. We just need to make sure that we're supporting them in every way we can.
All right. Let's see. The budget timeline was voted on unanimously to push it up to an April timeframe. Talk about how that will work for the accuracy of budgeting, for hiring the right number of people.
Sure. So one of the pieces of feedback that we've been getting from our building administrators is that they don't have enough time to make hires, or that when they get to the point of making a hire, a lot of the candidates have already chosen new jobs. And so as a result, we are moving up the budget process. The budget process is always, there's always a good deal of estimates involved, especially on the revenue side, in terms of figuring out what the tax revenues are going to look like. And so we're going to have to be a little bit more conservative in estimating our revenues. And we're going to have to use a little bit more forecasting in terms of estimating what our needs are in the classrooms. But it's, you know, we're moving it forward by about 2 months, which isn't a massive move, and we hope that gives us more flexibility on the hiring side to attract and retain the best teachers possible, which again goes into the value of excellent educators, which we've heard again and again from our community.
Yeah, but again, I mean, we're doing this kind of blindfolded, right? Because we don't have the student enrollment numbers until October. So we're just kind of...
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we never have our final student enrollment numbers until October. We always make estimates. But, you know, our previous budget closed in June, and we don't have our estimates until October. And now we're closing in April, and we don't have our finals till October. So that doesn't really change it or move the needle. You know, we have a very good, you know, we've been pretty accurate in terms of our forecasting. You know, our enrollment doesn't move one way or the other by more than a couple of percent every year. And so a lot of it is, you know, what additional programs are we adding? What additional, you know, paraprofessionals do we need to add to support our programs? You know, things like that. And we'll be looking at this as we go. I mean, this is something that we're going to try. We're going to be assessing it, you know, constantly throughout the year. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, then we can always switch it back to the way we did it next year.
Business Administrator Todd Halber gave a pretty technical assessment of feasibility and practicality of closing schools. So where are we leaning here? closing more? Or
yeah, well, you know, I could say I've said this before. I would like to see our schools closed. I personally, I think the board has to do some thinking about what the implications of that are. We've heard a lot from our community that they don't like having our schools continue to be open to out-of-boundary kids when we're putting trailers in at all of our schools and our schools are crowded. Again, you know, part of that is because we've added a lot of great programs like art and dance and music. It's, you know, part of it is because we offer preschool in our schools. But, you know, as the community grows, as the surrounding areas grow, we have to be very conscious of that. And so there is a lot of work that the board is going to be doing with Todd in the coming weeks to see what our options are. And a lot of it has to do with how the board directs the business administrator in regards to how what is considered instructional space. And so we're going to be looking at that long and hard and hopefully come away with a resolution in the next couple of weeks.
There was a brief discussion with regard to the issues, the impacts of kids being tardy or not coming to school at all or having on teachers in the classroom. And what's the extent of that problem?
I am not sure, to be honest. I don't recall that being discussed specifically, but I may have missed it. You know, tardiness, actually the United Way has been doing a lot of work on that. That's one of the priorities that they have. We met with them a couple weeks ago. They've done some actual detailed studies, especially in our elementaries, and there's a strong correlation between student tardiness and especially student absence and then performance and eventual graduation rates. And so, you know, we have to continue to look at that. Part of it in our community is that people like to take their kids out early around vacation times. But part of it also is, you know, continued absences cause kids to fall behind. And we recognize there's an issue there. And, you know, the United Way is very focused on it. They have a lot of data and a lot of resource to share with us. And we'll be continuing to work with them on that issue.
Okay. The district has a couple of perimeter fencing meetings coming up. You've put in place some neighborhood parent committees to help guide decisions over the next year while you install fences at the elementary schools. Can you give us any update on that?
Sure. So we had one meeting at Parley's last week. We have a meeting coming up in the coming weeks at Trailside and at Jeremy and McPolin. It's each school is obviously different. Each neighborhood has a different feel. Each neighborhood has different interests in terms of, you know, in terms of safety. The safety meetings that we're having encompass all of the safety improvements that we're making to the schools, which include changing the front entries, you know, putting in visitor management systems, changing the interior doors to be automatically, you know, to make them so they can automatically lock in the case of a lockdown, changing our exterior doors and locks. So there's a lot of things going on. One of the smaller pieces of that project is fencing around the playgrounds of the school. And that's something that's been recommended by a number of experts on the subject, including, you know, Department of Homeland Security, FEMA, National School Security Council, National Crime Prevention Council, which is the crime dog, if you remember those commercials, our sheriff's department, our police department, our fire department. The idea is to create a perimeter where we keep kids in and we keep unwanted visitors out. And there's also state statute that requires the school board to put fencing in to keep stray animals out, which is a uniquely Utah issue. But, you know, it's just part of creating safe and healthy schools for our kids. So at Parley's, a number of the neighbors wanted to be involved with what the fence looks like and exactly where it's placed. We have some HOAs that already have fencing, and they'd like the fencing on their sides to be reflective of what their neighborhood fencing looks like. And as a district, we're interested in being good neighbors and working with the neighbors and the communities to figure out, okay, what do the fences look like? Where are they? Do we need to put in some shrubs and trees as well to help mitigate the sight lines, things like that? And we're going to be working with them over the next few months.
So that paved trail that goes through McPolin Elementary near the playground out to Lucky John, that then gets closed during the day, huh?
Yeah, and we actually had someone drive down that paved road during the school day recently. And so, you know, we live in a very safe community, but things happen. And Our job is just to keep the perimeters of the schools closed during school hours. A lot of our schools have open space. A lot of our schools have shared resource where kids are always playing on the playground after school, on the weekends, during the summers. We have basin rec trails that go through some of our properties. Our goal is not to shut those off. Our goal is just, you know, while the kids are at school, to keep those perimeters secure so that people aren't wandering in and out or driving on the campus, things like that.
Does that get rerouted anywhere, though?
On McPolin,
do you use that regularly?
In terms of the road to McPolin, I'm not sure what our solution is. I think we have been speaking to the city about that. But, you know, all of them have unique issues, and we're going to figure out solutions for all of them. But, yes, that one needs to be closed during the day, and we have recent evidence as to why.
Okay. Andrew, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Park City School Board member Andrew Kaplan. Newstime 842. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, October is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. In the studio to talk about women's health education and what Summit County is doing this month, I have Summit County Health Department nurse and educator Carolyn Rose. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what have you the county have planned then for October?
Well, we've got some campaigns going on through Facebook, and we're working with the library as far as trying to educate women on different kinds of cancer, especially breast cancer, and the need for getting a mammogram.
So what are we doing with the library? Just displays? Or?
Yeah, they're doing displays, and they have some information on their website, and we're coordinating with that. But they've got some books out on display as well as some pamphlets and different things like that. Just letting another avenue to let women know that if they don't have insurance, we're there for them. And we can help them to get a mammogram free of charge.
Okay. And so there are screenings being done at the health department, or you send them somewhere?
No. We give them a voucher, and we send them up to the hospital. We have an agreement with Intermountain. Actually, the Utah Department of Health does. And so the mammogram will not cost them anything.
Okay. And then you're also providing cervical cancer screenings as well for free?
Yes. Yes.
All right. People can also get this done through the People's Health Clinic?
Yes. So we work pretty closely with them on this, and People's Health Center is only for uninsured. And so for those people who may have insurance, but it still doesn't cover a mammogram, then they can come to us, and that works perfectly. We can get them set up. They come in, we do a breast exam and or cervical cancer screen, and then set them up to go to the hospital for their mammogram.
So is that just this month, or is that done year-round?
Oh, that's done year-round. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah, yeah.
We just like to bring it to the forefront. Breast Cancer Month is October, so the awareness needs to go out. And, you know, in Summit County, our numbers are coming up as far as women getting screened. So that's everybody, insurance, no insurance, all that. We've come up to about 72%, which is much higher than it was a few years ago. And that's a good thing, but it's still not 100%. And, you know, people have these different sayings of, oh, it's going to hurt, or I don't have time. Well, yeah, it might be a little uncomfortable for a few minutes. However, it's much better than finding a lump and having surgery and chemo or radiation and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So why are these screenings important? I mean, of course, we've all heard about the story of a woman having a mammogram and then, you know, a month later being diagnosed with breast cancer that nothing showed up in the mammogram.
Nothing's perfect. So, you know, a woman has to know her own body. But the earlier cancer is detected, the better it is to treat. And the mammogram won't cure or prevent breast cancer. But if it can show a little lump, then that is just wonderful. And we have, there's digital screening mammography now, which is so much better than it was in the past. So they just have to go in and get it done.
Okay. And Summit County, I believe, has the dubious honor, I suppose, of having like the highest rate of breast cancer in the state. Have you?
I've seen that. I'm not really sure. I'd have to crunch the numbers a little bit. Sometimes with the small area, we don't have very many numbers. And so that skews the data. So you really have to look down into the specifics of that. Hmm. But I have seen that.
Hmm. And is it trend maybe to an older population as well? Or
No, I think it's just kind of the usual age ranges, you know, anywhere from 40 on up. And I haven't, like I said, I have to crunch the numbers a little bit to get to read the data accurately.
Okay. So if people are hearing this and do want that prevention screening, they just
call us. And the number is 435-333-1500, or they can go to our website at summitcountyhealth.org.
Okay, and it's also that time of year where you always recommend flu shots.
Yes, and I was going to ask you if you got yours, and I know you didn't.
I never do, right?
I know.
Someone told me, right, if I get the flu, I'll want a flu shot, but no, I take other means. And you tell me, well, if I get it, I'm putting others at risk. But
right.
People get flu shots and still get the flu.
That's right. That's because there's hundreds of different kinds of flu viruses out there. The flu shot covers the four main strains that are predicted to be the worst. Sometimes the scientists are right and sometimes they're wrong. However, it's something we can do that's pretty benign. I mean, it's sore for a minute or two. And if you can avoid it, I want to avoid it. And if you can avoid giving it to others who are babies or elderly or somebody who is on chemotherapy, then I'm all for that. But, you know, part of that is people need to stay home when they're sick, and they don't. You know, we would probably not have as much just normal cold and flus going around if people would just stay away and stay away from other people when they're ill and wash their hands. The usual.
Flu shots, I know, available, most pharmacies offer them, right?
Yes.
And it's paid for through a copay at the county health department. Can be free if necessary?
Well, for children, it can be free if there's no insurance to cover that. We try to have people pay a $10 copay for that. But we do bill a lot of insurances, so that's a good thing.
Okay. Caroline, anything else you want to mention?
Nope. I think that's it for today.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's Caroline Rose, nurse and health educator with Summit County Health Department. Well, coming up October 25th through the 29th, Heber City presents the 23rd annual Heber Valley Western Music and Cowboy Power Tea Gathering. In the studio with me, I have Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce event manager Rachel Kaler. On the phone with us, I've got Ranger Doug. He's with the group Riders in the Sky, one of the many entertainment acts coming our way. Good morning to both of you.
Thank you. Yes, it's going to be a great week. We're very excited about it.
Okay. Well, Rachel, as I mentioned, it's happening October 24th through the 25th through the 29th, starting with a dinner Wednesday night, kicks into full gear then Thursday morning. We've got, what, venues all over the county?
We do. So it's a five-day event with eight different stages. And this really has been something that Heber Valley just cherishes. We have over 30 different entertainers that are coming to town. The high school really is the core event, but we have events going on at Soldier Hollow Grill, the Zermatt Resort, the Wasatch Mountain Event Center, or Wasatch County Event Center, and the Midway Town Hall. So it really encompasses so many venues in the valley, but the high school really is that main stage auditorium where all the big stages, including Riders in the Sky, which will be performing on Thursday. And we're so excited to have them.
Okay, so again, that's Thursday, 7 p.m. We're talking two-time Grammy Award-winning Riders of the Sky. Tickets for that concert starting at $30. Guitarist Ranger Doug sings lead and baritone vocals. And Doug, I see that you're also playing with the Heber Valley Orchestra that evening. Can you tell us what to expect?
Isn't that going to be fun? Yes, we have orchestra charts. In fact, we did an album with the Nashville Symphony Orchestra, which was Grammy nominated, and so we, you know, the sweeping sound of the symphony fits perfectly with Western music and the way we think of it in the movies.
Yeah, so give us an idea of what your act is. You guys have a lot of fun, I know that.
We do have a lot of fun. That's been the other half of the act. From the beginning, we've always wanted to have a lot of fun with the audience and interact with them and, be real entertainers, as well as preserving this beautiful style of Western harmony singing that the Sons of the Pioneers began all those years ago. Some of the great songs of that era and some new songs in that style.
So Riders in the Sky have always encouraged people to live life the cowboy way. What does that mean?
Yes, well, you get in this situation, in this era of situational ethics, and you caught between the Scylla and the Charybdis of a difficult moral choice, just ask yourself, what would Gene or Roy or Ranger Doug do? And that's the cowboy way.
Now, you all yodel, but you're like the master of the bunch. Can you tell us what's the connection between what I think many, like myself, is a Swiss thing, yodeling, and then how it was picked up by cowboys?
Well, the story goes, whether it's true or not, that Jimmy Rogers, the first great recording star of country music, heard yodeling from a Swiss Chautauqua act or tent show act. And tried to do it and could do it and developed his sort of bluesy yodeling style. And the next generation of yodelers that came along, like Roy Rogers and Elton Britt and Gene Autry, picked up on that and advanced it into the the arena of high technique where it is today.
Okay, well, I've got a song from that, Writers in the Sky Yodeling, so I will play that just before we jump into network news there. But, you know, I noticed on your webpage that you're playing a Gibson guitar gifted to you from Wesley Tuttle, and I guess it all came full circle when you recently played at the Newberry Opera House in South Carolina, where there's a tribute backstage to Tuttle's appearance there back in 1946. So you still, is that your go-to guitar?
Yes, I love that thing. It is Wesley bought it brand new in Cincinnati in 1939. And Marilyn wanted me to have it after he passed in, I think it was 2002 or 3. And, you know, I've taken good care of it, tried to be a good steward of the treasure that it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive, 1939.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Cool. Okay, again, that's just Writers in the Sky, just one of the many acts. Again, it's happening Thursday night, 7 p.m. at the Wasatch High School. Thanks for your time there, Doug.
Oh, glad to talk to you and looking forward to coming back to Utah. We love it there.
Okay. And Rachel, lots more going on Thursday and Friday and Saturday and Sunday. Tell us about some of the other highlights.
Yes, and really, if you've never been before, it's an opportunity to come and watch Writers in the Sky, Bellamy Brothers, the Bar J Wranglers. We've got a great band out of North Carolina, Summerbrook, and the Mountain Faith Band. And what you need to know is if you buy a ticketed event, you get into the Buckaroo Fair for free, and there is continuous music from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m., three different stages with musicians and poets. And it really is just a gathering of like-minded cowboy way Western. What I love is the Western outfits that people come in, beautiful coats and belt buckles and boots. We've got a Buckaroo Ball Friday night at the Midway Town Hall. Children under 12 are free. It's very family friendly, and it's just $10. And so there's opportunities at all different venues with the Mounted Shooters competition, and this is free. You can come in and watch these amazing horses and marksmen where they're shooting gunpowder off the horse in these patterns. And Tom Whitaker is opening his cabin just in Midway just for a day on Thursday from 10 to 4. And it is an over $1 million of collectibles from Civil War and Western memorabilia. It really is a cherished cherished museum in our community. And I
that's
would invite anyone. Oh, it's
that's
fabulous.
Free. And that's free, actually.
That is free, yeah. So we do have the free event. You can come Thursday night. We call it our community night. And walk around the Buckaroo Fair with two of the stages that will have continuous music from 5 to 9, and that is a free night. So if you just want to come and check it out, come over Thursday. You can get a ticket to the Writers in the Sky, which starts at 7 o'clock there with the Heber Valley Orchestra. It just really is amazing. 5 days of continuous music. We average about 10,000 people that come to it. It's quite the event for our little valley in Heber. And you can find out more information on the website, HeberValleyCowboyPoetry.com.
Okay, well, let's talk. I mean, of course, it's a lot of it all just started with the cowboy poetry. And
yes.
Who have we got coming to represent that?
So Waddy Mitchell is our host, and he is fabulous. You know, he was one of the founders of the Elko National Gathering. And then Andy Nelson, who is just a riot. He has his own cowboy radio. Jeff Carson is a local Heber City poet that started when he was angry with the Heber City government and came up with a cowboy poem that he read at a council meeting and realized that it struck a nerve with people. And so he's been performing for over 15 years. We've got Jake Riley, who actually just had a baby a little bit early, so we're hoping he can still come. Sam DeLue, who is a local poet, and Paul Bliss, our local Utah poets, and they are just wonderful. And you can see the cowboy poets, which I wish they called it cowboy comedy, because it is really fun. It strikes a nerve, the funny bone. It really is a lot of fun. And then, of course, these amazing musicians that come and play on the different stages. The main stage really is our headliners, but you can see some great talent on the Chuckwagon stage, the Tombstone stage, and the Cow stage. And those are those $10 stages that you can come in and just listen.
Okay. And so you've pretty much have that going through the event.
It is. Yeah. Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday. And then Cowboy Church has always been a favorite with the locals. In fact, we just shut down tickets because it's sold out. So the only shows that are sold out right now are the dinner show, the kickoff show, which is Wednesday, and then Sunday. But there are still lots of tickets available for the Riders in the Sky, the Bellamy Brothers, the Bar J Wranglers. And we've got some great shows at the Zermatt this year. R.W. Hampton and Molly and the Mineshaft and the Sons of the San Joaquin. And I'd be in trouble if I didn't talk about the Sons of the San Joaquin. These are two brothers, Jack and John. And they have been performing since the 80s, but they have this amazing baritone voice. It just resonates. And they will be performing Saturday at 3 o'clock on the main stage and Friday night at the Soldier Hollow Grill, which is a dinner show. And they are just fabulous. This is their last show in Utah. They are 84 and 86 years old, and you would not know it by the richness of their voice. But they have said, you know, it's just too tough to come. And so we encourage you to come and listen, as Ranger Doug mentioned, you know, the Sons of the Pioneers, and that's who inspired the Sons of the San Joaquin. So please come and just enjoy.
Okay. Again, a lot more information, Heber Valley, cowboypoetry.com.
Yes.
Rachel and Ranger Doug, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.